John Entwistle of The Who.
It's Paloma Faith here.
This is Howard Jones.
It's Kim Wilde here.
This is Engelbert Humperdinck, and you're listening to The Sounds of Christmas
podcast.
Hi, I'm Ken Kessler, and welcome to The Sounds of Christmas podcast. If you're new to this podcast, I want to start by saying thanks for joining us. If you're not new, welcome back. Either way, I'm glad you're here. Now, to avoid any confusion, I want to start off by saying there won't be any music played here. This is a place for conversation. I'll talk about Christmas music and some related topics, sometimes by myself and sometimes with guests. If you're looking for music, just go to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the tree or the player on the front page or on the Listen Now page. We play the best variety of Christmas music all year long. Well, except in October, when we play the best variety of Halloween music. I am very excited to have two singer-songwriters with us on this episode of the podcast, Dawn Yoder and Lisa Troyer. Thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Yes, thanks for having us. We're excited to be with you.
Is that the way that you like to be introduced, as singer-songwriters, or is there something else that you prefer?
I mean, that's probably the best way I've been introduced. I've been introduced a lot of ways. Songwriter.
Yeah, that's preferable. We're fine with that.
Okay. Now, you guys have a very interesting project that you have kicked off recently, and I want to get to that, but you two have put out a bunch of Christmas music together and have been doing that for a while, and I'm curious how you got together, found each other in the first place.
Well, okay. Well, back in 2009, a mutual friend of ours had invited me to a faith-based event. And she kept saying, you need to meet Dawn. You need to meet Dawn. And it was like, okay, well, all right. We can do that sometime. And that evening in January, we just got to know each other. And we had an event coming up the following weekend. And I had heard Dawn sing, and she had been leading worship at that event, and I just was like, hey, you want to come and sing with me next weekend? And much to my surprise and delight, she said yes. And so that was 15 years ago, and I would say she's my best friend now. We write songs together and just enjoy one another's company.
Was the one of the common bonds a love of Christmas music, or was that something you just kind of discovered along the way?
That's something we probably discovered a little bit later. I really, really, really like Christmas, like to the point of I'm like crazy Christmas lady. So I love everything about Christmas. I love the spiritual aspect. I love the lights, the decorations, the music, the movies, like all of it. And so just as Lisa and I became friends, whoever gets to know me knows that I love Christmas. It's just, and she likes Christmas too. So it wasn't like she didn't, but I'm very much a diehard Christmas queen. So yeah, I just kind of went that direction because of that, I think.
Was the 2013 album, was that It's Christmas Time, was that the first Christmas release that the two of you put out?
Well, yes, kind of, sort of. The way that came about is that, you know, we both have a love for 60s music, and we had kind of developed some original material that was kind of built around that sound. Back in 2011, actually, Dawn had shared the beginning of a song, which is actually the song that we have out now, but it's kind of gone through a metamorphosis over the time period. And when she played the chord progression, all of a sudden I heard this Phil Spector wall of sound kind of thing. So it was like, I think this might work in that genre. And so originally the lyric was, you know, just a little bit more general, but not too long after we had cut that song, we were doing a project with some of our friends in Nashville. And I woke up one morning and the Todd Rundgren song Love is the Answer was in my head. And we had breakfast at Starbucks and Cool Springs and Franklin area. And we were talking to one of our friends who works for a record label. And we were like, you know, just kind of had this feeling we needed to cut this. It was the last day we were recording, actually. And then Dawn had this great idea of pairing that with the Fanny Crosby hymn, Tell Me the Story, which, you know, it's a, you know, Christian song, but it's very Christmas-centric in some of the verses. And it worked out so well that when I had been invited to do some stuff in Germany in 2012, I was being interviewed by a gentleman named Otto Meyer at SWR1 in Baden-Baden. And he heard the song. He said, "Oh, this is a Christmas song." And I was just like, "Yes, it is." And he played it. And that was actually our introduction to getting a lot of Christmas airplay in Germany. So I came back and I said, "Hey, we need to kind of press into this Christmas thing." And so we re-lyric the whole retro project that we did. And that what is what eventually became that 2013 album, and then went back to Germany and they started playing more songs off of that project. And so it's just kind of perpetuated itself. And it's like, you know, we text back and forth with like, "Here's an idea for a Christmas song," or, you know, we've just been doing that now for over a decade.
I don't want it to be too stereotypical about Germany loving Christmas music, but wow, do they ever.
Yeah.
When I started the Sounds of Christmas, and I would get, you know, I would pick up different listeners in different states, and it was kind of neat to see that. And the first country outside of the U.S. that was listening was Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And that has continued and grown over the years, where I have, somebody had messaged me on Facebook, I think it was on Facebook, that they were listening in Germany and they had heard me in some little Christmas shop, and that they were playing. And this was in like June, but it's just amazing that there is that love it for Christmas music. And you guys had a top 40 hit of this Christmas Vow in Germany. Was that the first?
I think that was maybe the second or third single that had been released. I think that was that in 2015 or 2016?
I think that was the third. I think before that, we had It's Christmas Time. I remember that. I think maybe that was the first one.
Okay.
Does that sound right to you?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I guess Love is the Answer was the first quote unquote Christmas song. But yeah, Christmas song in earnest with a real Christmas lyric and everything. Yeah. And then Dawn did a great vocal on the upbeat version of Night Before Christmas. And I know that the stations over there, especially like in Munich and Stuttgart, they really enjoyed that tune as well. So
it was a year or two later that you guys put out This Is Christmas, which I think was, now we call it like a deluxe, but I think it was sort of, and correct me if I'm wrong, it was sort of It's Christmas Time with a lot more songs.
Yeah. It was kind of like we had just collected so many songs that we felt worked in the genre. So yeah, it was like, hey, if one's good, two's better.
She didn't have to twist my arm too hard to write a Christmas song. I can tell you that right now. I was like, let's go. Yeah, and Christmas songs are really fun to write because there's so many ideas that come from so many places. Like I remember the one song we have, Sound of Distant Sleigh Bells. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing that as an email subject from a like October email from like a place that does pictures. So like Shutterfly or one of those kind of places. And it was just like a email tag subject, you know, Sound of Distant Sleigh Bells. And I was like, ooh, that should be a song. So it's just fun because it's just like, to me, Christmas is everywhere all the time.
It really is. My wife will kid me about it, but we can go, it's not really antiquing, but, you know, looking in old shops and stuff. And I will always be the first one to find, no matter what time of year, there's a Santa Claus,
yes,
or there's a wreath, there's some Christmas lights, there's a Department 56 house. You know, I'll always find something no matter where we go. Always. It's because it is always around. You just, if you're not looking for it, maybe you don't see it. But
yeah, well, I have to keep my Charlie Brown Christmas tree up year round because it's not only inspiration and a reminder to write Christmas music, but it's just, it's part of the eclectic decor of the house. So.
Yeah, I remind people often that in A Christmas Carol, Dickens wrote for Scrooge to say that he will try to keep Christmas in his heart all the year. Mm-hmm. And everybody loves that in December, but in April, What are you doing listening to that? Or why do you have a little tree on your desk?
Well, I keep lights up year round. That's my thing. Not on the whole house, but there's certain windows and parts of my house that always have colored lights up. And I turn them on because it just makes me feel more festive. And yes, it keeps Christmas in my heart. I love that story. And every year I read it again. I mean, yeah, I watch the movie and stuff like that too, but I read it. I don't know. Something about reading it off the page kind of puts Christmas in my heart just a little bit deeper.
I feel exactly the same. I try to read it every year. I don't think I got to it last year, but I just took it out actually this morning. And I'm looking forward to snuggling in with that over the weekend.
Yep. It's a fun read. And you can do it in a weekend if you got a little bit of time. So
yeah,
pretty good.
Yeah. You guys wrote a book together too?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We did.
Real Woman Leading with Proverbs 31 Values, right?
Go ahead, Dawn.
Yes. Okay. So yeah, we did. We wrote a book together, had an opportunity. Lisa was already an author and she thought of this idea and had an opportunity with the publisher to go ahead and write a book. And so one of the things that I've done for a long time is I write about values. So just the things that you would think are values, like everything from honesty, planning, preparation, listening, boundaries, resilience, self-esteem, hope, pressure, resolving conflict, all these topics. I write like 2-page learning curriculum they use all over the world. And really those values, they're universal. I mean, it doesn't matter what religion that you're a part of or what you believe in. It's just basically human decency, how we treat each other and how all of our decisions either lead to benefit or consequence. And so how we make those decisions, we base that on values, you know, it depends on how we come out. And so Lisa had the great idea of why don't we put that into a book, you know, based on this Proverbs 31 woman, which is really funny to me because I always thought I'm never going to sew. So I just wasn't real big on that. But when I looked at the actual, as a grown-up lady, I looked at Proverbs 31, I was like, hey, wait a minute, this lady like owned a field and she had people that worked for her and she, you know, bought and sold goods. And she kind of was a, you know, do it all. Like she brought home the bacon and fried it up in the pan, you know? And so we just kind of took that approach to that Proverbs 31 book for, you know, it's really a leadership book for women, but we're all leaders. You know, we're leading ourselves first and then whoever else we lead. But it's really about, you know, just kind of making our decisions based on values. And I don't know, that's where it started at. And it was fun to write that with Lisa because she has a million stories. So I just loved her. I had value stuff like, you know, that's kind of my pulpit, I guess, in a way. But Lisa added so many great stories and just life experience to that. So we had a good time writing that together.
And of course, the values are applicable, especially at Christmas family dinners, like the value of restraint.
Restraint, patience. I've been writing about patience lately because it's like, you know, when you've got those moments when things are busy, when there's lots of pressure, when you've got maybe some family circumstances that get a little dicey, having a little bit of patience, being able to live in your moment rather than in the future, you know, just stay patient with things. So definitely falls in with Christmas.
And a lot of those values are displayed in the Charlie Brown Christmas television program.
Yes, they are.
You know, patience is one of those that I struggle with often. And every time I feel like I ask for patience and what I want is just, you know, zap, there you go, you have patience. But what I get is something that I have to go through to develop patience. Yes. Like, you know, I should really just stop asking because this isn't helping my blood pressure.
Yeah, be careful what you ask for. Yeah.
Right. So, Don, the series of books that you were talking about that you wrote, that's the Global Priority Solutions, right?
Yes, Global Priority Solutions. And they're really booklets. They're like, we call them roundtables where you can get together with a few people. And it's just like 2 pages of material on a topic, takes about 30 minutes a week. And it's just kind of, you create a measurable action step to help yourself. It's like a personal growth thing. So yeah, but our website for that is globalpriorityssolutions.org. Pretty easy to find. But yeah, if anybody's interested in that, it's pretty cool. It's really interesting to me how it's gone worldwide. There have been literally millions that have gone through the program now, and I'm amazed by it all the time because it started out just, you know, we were business people, like Lisa mentioned, and it was like, okay, working with people in my own company, you know, to help them. Because I saw a need for people who hadn't been taught certain things or didn't have the benefit of the life and the parents that I had. And I thought, well, if I can help them with that. And then it kind of grew out from there. So it's been kind of an amazing, amazing journey.
Yes, we affectionately refer to Dawn as the values whisperer.
And Lisa, you've written A Place to Belong along with a journal that goes with that. Mm-hmm. Can you sort of talk a little bit about what that's about?
Well, for me, you know, part of my faith journey is that everyone needs a place to belong. I mean, you know, I'm a Christian, so I mean, I feel like Jesus has given me a place to belong. And the origin of that is definitely Christmas, because, you know, that's when he appeared on the scene, as it were. But yeah, it's very much about building community. And, you know, like in the situation, like with the values, it doesn't really matter what your background is, but it's like values and giving people a place to belong. You know, it just helps us live more fulfilling lives. And that's one of the things that we focus on, like in A Place to Belong or in Real Women Leading. It's like, it's about acceptance and authenticity, you know, affirmation, and accountability. And it's like, you know, we can all have a lot of good intentions, but, you know, sometimes it's a little bit difficult to reach outside of ourselves. But those action steps, those implementations, it's like with the values. If you intentionally do something, you know, small, measurable action steps, I mean, think about it. Like if you, you know, want to be more intentional about, you know, honesty or restraint, I mean, it's like if you improve just 1% a week, over the course of a year, you can improve that aspect of your character 52%.
Right.
And yeah. So just think from one Christmas to another, how much you can improve and bringing hope and just, you know, being the kind of person you'd want to be around. That's a lot of what this is about. And the Christmas message, just, it augments that platform of what the desire of our hearts is, to, you know, just add value to people and to give them a place to belong in a circle of friends. And sometimes it's through the written word, and sometimes it's through, you know, just having a cup of coffee with somebody. Sometimes it's through writing a Christmas song.
And I look at the timeline for all of this, and so much of it is right there at the same time. I mean, I'm sure that, you know, on a given Tuesday during this period, you're not writing songs and recording songs and writing books and doing all that. But it seems like 2013, 2015, in that area, all of this stuff was happening for both of you.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, we've lived in close proximity for, what, about 30 years? But we didn't really know each other. And I think that maybe, you know, that's something that, you know, I know most of your listeners are, you know, interested in Christmas music per se, but it's like, you know, folks that love Christmas music, I mean, I think they have big hearts. And so, you know, maybe it's just a reminder that there might be somebody in their community that, you know, maybe you've seen them at the grocery store for, you know, your entire life. Maybe you went to elementary school with them, but at this season in your life, you have the opportunity maybe to, you know, just reach out to them. Maybe they've gone through a life situation that, you know, they didn't expect, and maybe you can be an encouragement. And Christmas is the perfect time to reach out to folks who are struggling. Because, I mean, as much as we love Christmas, we know that it's a difficult season for a lot of folks.
You know, that's not to make this all about Charles Dickens, but that's one of my favorite parts of A Christmas Carol is nephew Fred saying how he's going to keep reaching out, going to keep inviting him every year. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, spoiler for anybody who hasn't somehow read that. I feel like everybody who listens to this kind of podcast has read it and seen the movie probably already this December.
Yeah.
But at the end of the movie, you know, Scrooge shows up and he wants to know if, you know, well, you let an old fool come in out of the cold.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, that's the part that really gets me every year. And it is because, you know, you do have to keep reaching out, because sooner or later, it's gonna work.
Yeah, well, sometimes I think, you know, it's a Whoville mentality. I mean, I was just watching the Grinch the other day, and it was just like, you know, I mean, he's such a jerk, but, you know, it's like when his heart gets big and you know, Wendy's, you know, making the big eyes and they welcome him into that circle of friends. I mean, it's like even the Grinch can be transformed by the love that comes at Christmas time.
Yeah. Yeah. How did you go from these Christmas albums and these books to connecting with Cliff Richard?
Well, I've actually had the opportunity to know Cliff and his manager, Malcolm Smith, for about 30 years. My husband, actually, his uncle had worked for Dr. Billy Graham. And Cliff Richard is a Christian. And whenever Dr. Graham would do crusades in Great Britain, Cliff would sing at those. And it was during a time period where, you know, it was after Cliff had the hits with like Olivia Newton-John, you know, the Suddenly duet, We Don't Talk Anymore, Dreamin', those things from the late 70s, early 80s. And, you know, he wasn't really very active here. And just through those relationships, there was a lot of just wonderful assets, like he played Wembley Stadium, you know, 144,000 folks. I mean, because a lot of folks don't know Cliff here in the U.S., but, you know, he's, yeah, you know, iconic in, you know, Europe and Australia. And so I had the opportunity, because I'd been working in Nashville and, you know, was a copyright administrator. I understood how to license things and intellectual property. So I was able to, you know, take those assets that had not really been exposed here in North America. And we licensed those to PBS affiliates across the country. And so that's kind of how I got to know Cliff. And then, you know, just, he's just such a nice man. And of course, you know, he's a Christmas guy too, mistletoe mm-hmm. and wine and all that. And so, you know, I've just known him for, you know, a long time. And then during COVID, you know, everybody was kind of shut down. And then Malcolm, Cliff's manager, he's like, hey, do you want to sing on a song with Cliff? And it's like, yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah, sure. Why not? And so, Dawn and I, we have a friend in Nashville whose name's John Hartley, and, he produced the track and I cut a vocal here in Ohio. And then, you know, Cliff, he was, you know, actually, I think he was in Barbados at the time, but so put that together. And then we actually kind of did a transformative version of it. If you look on Spotify under the group name Sleigh Sounder, like a Christmas sleigh, we did a remix of it, because Dawn and I were kind of in the dance music mode, because Dave Audet had done a remix on a remake that Dawn and I did of Pat Benatar's Invincible, and it charted him on the dance chart in UK. And Malcolm, Cliff's manager, is like, that's kind of catchy. And I said, well, why don't we do that with the Silent Night thing? And so we took the non-Silent Night lyrics of the title of the song is Fills My Heart With Joy. And so Dawn and I both got to sing with Cliff Richard, and that was released wow. last year by Warner UK. So it's kind of a sleeper. We kind of just did it for fun, but yeah, I mean, Cliff is great. And yeah, Dawn and I like working with Cliff Richard. And through that relationship, Cliff is a friend of Alexander Seidel at Aviator Music in Hamburg. And Malcolm made the introduction. And that's how Dawn and I got introduced to the Liverbirds. So yeah, you can't make this stuff up. It's kind of like, does God have a hand in this or what?
Let's talk about the Liverbirds. For anybody who doesn't know, and I didn't, the Liverbirds were an all-girl. Would you say all-girl or all-women? I want to be correct.
Yeah, well, they were teenagers when they started. Okay. So, yeah, all-girl.
all-girl rock band from Liverpool in the 60s. And now you guys have sort of breathed new life into this group. How did it start? How did you decide to do that?
How did we decide to do that, Dawn? We were kind of just invited in to the nest, no pun intended. Well, actually, kind of pun intended. But no, I mean, it's like there were two members of the group that are, you know, they had passed away, and their names were Pam and Val. They were both the guitarists. And Sylvia Wiggins and Mary McGlory, the drummer and bassist, respectively. They're kind of like the Beatles. The drummer and the bassist, you know, survived. And with the memoir that Mary and Sylvia wrote, in the UK it's called The Live or Birds, but here in the States it's called The Other Fab Four. And the book has been very well received, and the New York Times actually did a video op-ed that if you, you know, put New York Times, The Live or Birds, it's a very, very interesting little documentary short. And so, yeah, I mean, with the advent of a gentleman named Ian Salmon, I think it's salmon, like a fish salmon. Anyway, he wrote a musical called Girls Don't Play Guitars, because when Mary and Sylvia met John Lennon and Paul McCartney at the Cavern Club, Paul was very gracious, as you would well imagine. And then John Lennon said, girls don't play guitars. And they were like, we're going to show him. And they did. So, yeah, and now there's a musical, and Sylvia and Mary are, I mean, they're just awesome. I mean, Dawn, go ahead and just, you know, just tell how much fun it's been to get to know them.
Amazing. Yeah, they're amazing. They're just so full of mischief and life and fun. And it's just, they're just, you can tell they're giddy to be back on their instruments and back in a band, you know, so it's just really fun to be with them. But yeah, that opportunity came about because of Lisa's connection with Cliff. And when Alexander reached out to Malcolm about, hey, looking for material, do you know, looking for something for the girls. They're still the girls. Doesn't matter how old they are. And Lisa Troyer, she might have something. So that kind of connected us to them. And just with Lisa and I, it's pretty much, if there's an opportunity, we're just kind of conditioned. We're yes people. So if something comes up, we're like, well, yeah, we should do that, you know, because we're in little nowhere Amish country, Ohio. So when people reach out to you from Europe and say, hey, do you have a song? It's like, sure we do. So yeah, I reached out to Lisa, and Lisa, then you're the one that suggested a Christmas song to them.
Yeah, I just thought, I mean, it just seems like, you know, they have to have at least one Christmas song, because I had actually been listening to their material, and, you know, that, like that Phil Spector Christmas album, you know, it's just like, once I hear something, I hear these twangy guitars and this big reverb, it's like I just start thinking that, it's like, have they ever done a Christmas song? And then, and the guys at the label were like, well, no. And it's like, and they were like, that's an idea. And it's like, well, do you have one? It's like, well, actually we do. And so we actually thought, you know, they were going to just have, you know, Mary and Sylvia do the rhythm section, and that they were going to have a couple of European singers. We were just like elated to be able to contribute a song that we wrote. But then they heard us on our retro demo, and we were invited to, like I said, hop in the nest with them. And so we cut a new vocal, and yeah, and we had the privilege of singing on NDR television live on the 6th of December in Hamburg, Germany. We were just kind of like, is this for real? Are we really doing this? But it was awesome. Yeah, it's great.
How big were the Live or Birds in England?
In England, it seems like they didn't have the same impact that they did in what we call the GSA region, Germany, Switzerland, Austria. They toured extensively, and they played at the Star Club all the time. They actually toured in Japan as well in the late 60s. And so they, I mean, it was kind of funny when Dawn and I were there. It's kind of like, you know, that the ladies really had a significant impact on the music scene there in Germany. And it's like, it's kind of like kids in a candy store. We just get to watch and observe and be part of this. But yeah, very, very well known. And it's like, it seems like the knowledge of, you know, how important they are in music history is actually kind of being reintroduced with the release of their memoir, and then also the musical Girls Don't Play Guitars that played for, well, it played before COVID, and then they brought it back just this fall to the Royal Court Theater in Liverpool. And I mean, it was like sold out like every night for over a month. And it was just crazy how so many people in Liverpool were saying, why didn't we know them? But it's like they actually had been invited by Brian Epstein to be managed by him. And they wanted to go to Hamburg. And he said, no, don't go to Hamburg. But they wanted to anyway. And so they kind of just pursued that end of things. But yeah, very, very well known in Germany and Switzerland and Austria. So I'd like to get them exposed to our friends at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, which is about 2 hours from where Dawn and I live.
And the Star Club, it's where it's not as famous, at least not as well known as the Cavern Club, but it was still, that was an important spot for the Beatles when they were starting.
Oh yeah, the Beatles, Chuck Berry played there, Jimi Hendrix, you know, Jerry Lee Lewis. I mean, it's like it's really a significant part of rock history in the European theater. So yeah, we here in the States are maybe not quite as well acquainted with it as we are the Cavern Club in Liverpool. But yeah, very, very influential in the music scene, especially during the 60s there in Germany.
So the new single is Joy to the World, mm-hmm. from the Liverbirds, featuring Lisa and Dawn. But this is not Joy to the World that everybody would be thinking of when you hear that.
No, it's not.
No, it's not. It's Lisa and Dawn's version of Joy to the World. Yes, definitely. It definitely has a 60s feel. Like Lisa had said, those twangy guitars, and it's kind of groovy that way. And then the references are very they're from our time period. They're from Lisa and Dawn time period. So there's references are made to things like Charlie Brown's Christmas and the movie A Christmas Story and, you know, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And, you know, all those things are more our references for our Joy to the World. But it still is the Christmas story, just kind of a little more 60s groovy.
Is there more to come from the Liverbirds with the two of you?
Yes, there is. Yeah. Dawn did an incredible vocal when we were in Hamburg. Sylvia Wiggins, the drummer, her son, Steve, he wrote a great song, and Dawn just did an incredible vocal. And then I did a cover version of Hound Dog, and we've actually written 3 new songs. And we're scheduled to go back in March. And while I'm convalescing, Dawn and I are going to be working on some new material that we hope to be able to record in March when we go back to Germany.
Very cool. I don't want to press too much because there should be some surprises. But other than that, and that's a big thing, what's on the agenda for Lisa and Dawn for 2025, say?
Well, writing.
Yes.
And, you know, just kind of seeing where this Liverbirds thing takes us. It's, you know, it's very intriguing. I mean, you know, there's been talk of additional media surrounding the group. And so, you know, we're kind of just like the little sisters. So we're kind of anticipating, we're following the lead of what comes to Mary and Sylvia. And it's just a real privilege just to, you know, be in their purview. I mean, I don't know, Dawn, what do you think?
Yeah, I definitely think that. Just what you said, Lisa, we'll definitely be doing writing, which I'm looking forward to. Like you said, with some recording. But I think one of the things that's really important to Lisa and I is to help establish in any way that we can legacy for the Liver Birds, so that people do know about them. They did have a significant impact in rock and roll history, being the first all-female rock band. It's a pretty cool thing, you know, especially back in that time. It was so dominated, you know, by male bands. Yeah, there were singers that were female, but not like playing instruments and they're the band. And so it's just really cool to be able to take part of that with them in any way we can and just support them however we can and like hopefully help, like I said, help establish a legacy for them, because it's, I think people should know about them. They're they're pretty cool. And, you know, there are people that the people who do know, like for me, I was familiar. I have a friend who's, you know, their age, and he had a band and they had a girl singer and she sang their material. So he's all about the Liver Birds, even though he's from Ohio, you know, and there's others like that who are in the music field that really, you know, have a love for 60s music and British Invasion and all that type of thing, that know those stories. But I just think it'd be really fun for more people to know. I'd love to see their musical go to Broadway. I'd love to see that, you know, those things go further directions for them, just so people can get to know them, because their story is interesting and they're really wonderful people. And so when you, there's an interesting story and wonderful people, you just kind of want everyone to hear about it, because it's one of those feel good, brings hope. Yeah, it's just really cool. So that's the hope with them. And on our other end with our other things, you know, I'm still working on writing values, working on a program for young people that are at risk. So I'm excited about that. That's one of the new things I have going on that I'm going to be working on. And there's always something happening. But I love, Lisa, I wanted, like what you said, Lisa, to look for that person. I definitely want to reiterate that, which you said is that, you know, we were talking about how we became friends, is that there are people around you and there are opportunities around you that you, if you don't look closely, you're going to miss it. You got to pay attention, because things are always happening. There's always something for you. And I mean, this year, you know, doing this Christmas song, being with the Liver Birds, those to me are like dreams that I never thought could have ever happened. Cause I'm the girl that went 4 or 5 years old was so addicted to 60s music that like, that's all I listened to, and never always thought I was born too late. I was born too late to take a part of that. And then here I am now in a small way taking a part of that. And it's just like, who knew that a dream like that could be fulfilled? And then I remember when I was little, I loved Christmas albums, and my very first most favorite Christmas album was Amy Grant's first A Christmas Album. I just love that album. I thought, oh, I would always love to make, I'd love to write Christmas songs, and never thought I could do it. And then here I am, not only writing a Christmas song with my best good friend, Lisa, but writing a song that's 60 style with an authentic 60 rock and roll band. It's insane. So I just think, you know, people, don't give up on your dreams, and, yeah, and, you know, keep your eyes open to who's around you, because you just don't know what can happen. So just, maybe your dream isn't music. Maybe your dream is something else, but whatever it is, just don't give up and don't think, oh, that can never happen now, I'm too old. Cause let me tell you, I'm too old, but it's happening anyway. So yay.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, I mean, we would really like to, and I'm sure that you have a vast and very creative audience, because people that like Christmas stuff are pretty creative. We really would like to press into this Christmas in July thing. We think that it's an opportunity for, you know, the ladies, the Liver Birds, to be introduced, you know, in a season where, you know, it's like the ladies that are watching these Hallmark movies, I mean, they would absolutely love Mary and Sylvia. Sure. Like, you know, the Hallmark wine and all that fun stuff. And it's like, so yeah. I mean, Dawn and I, we have a lot of ideas all the time, but, you know, it's a good idea no matter where it comes from. So if there's somebody that's just been kind of like waiting for an opportunity, you know, to do something Christmas in July, I would be more than happy to talk to them about that. I mean, because, you know, it's like the, when I brought up, you know, the marketing concept to Alexander at the label in Germany, he said, Christmas in July. And I said, oh yeah, it's like, it's a real thing. And I told him about Hallmark movies and all that kind of stuff. And he was like, well, why don't we re-release the single in July and give it another round of promotion? And you ladies bring your ideas. He says, that sounds like great fun. And it's like, so all of these Christmas music fans, we'd like to invite you along to celebrate Christmas in July with us, with the Liverbirds, and we'll just see what comes of that.
I'll reach out to you guys in like 5 or 6 months as we're getting close to July and see what's cooking and maybe get you to come back on and talk about it.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
That would be real fun.
So I have to tell you one thing.
I have to tell you something. You changed my mind about something, Ken. And I have to let you know, I wrote in my notes to make sure I tell Ken this. So I was listening to some of your podcasts, and I listened to one you released recently about Last Christmas. Because it's one of my, I love that song. I love that song. And so the thing that you said was, because, you know, some of your listeners don't think Last Christmas is a Christmas song. It's just something said at Christmas. And to me, it's like iconically part of my life. It's a Christmas song. So it has to be. But the thing that really caught my attention is you compared it to the movie Die Hard.
Yes.
So my kids always want to watch Die Hard at Christmas. I'm like, and I'm always like, that's not a Christmas movie. And so when you were giving your arguments, I'm like, oh, I have to change my opinion. Die Hard is now a Christmas movie. So you changed my mind. And I just want you to know, my four adult children are going to be so thrilled that mom has her mind changed about Die Hard. So you did it, Ken. You made their year.
What Don's talking about, and I'll do it briefly, is that I said that, in my opinion, Die Hard's a Christmas movie because it takes place at Christmas. It's at a Christmas party. It's in a building that is empty because it's Christmas time. And that was the plan that the bad guys had, to do this at Christmas. So Christmas is an integral part in the plot, and none of it would have happened if it wasn't at Christmas. And I know it's not what most people think of as a Christmas movie, and that's okay, because we all celebrate or observe or whatever the holidays in our own ways with our own traditions, and nobody is necessarily more right than somebody else. So if it's a Christmas movie to you, then it is a Christmas movie for you. And if it's not, that's okay too. And I got enough messages and emails when that episode aired, so save those. Don't send them out now.
Well, it's like with Last Christmas. It's kind of like if you went to high school in the 80s, like us, and listened to Wham, it's a Christmas song.
Yeah. Well, and the argument for that was that it's got Christmas in the name, and they say that name over and over, but it really doesn't have anything to do with Christmas. It's somebody got dumped and they're hoping that it's going to be better this Christmas.
Yeah. Well, hope springs eternal at Christmas.
Yes, it certainly does. And again, you know, if it gives you that little bit of Christmas magic, then it's a Christmas song.
That it's Christmas. Absolutely. I told you, you changed my mind. I listened, because to me, that song was always a Christmas song to me, but the movie wasn't, and you changed my mind. I listened to what you said, and I was like, he's right. Okay, I'm going to change my stance here. It's a Christmas movie now.
Well, with that thought in mind, I think that we can get our folks, our friends in Germany, to actually do Christmas markets in July, and then we can do outdoor concerts with the Liverbirds doing Christmas music in July in Germany. See there? Now we've got it all figured out.
Yeah. So. And then record one of those Christmas concerts, and you could put that out next December.
There you go. Sounds like we got a production team going on.
Yeah. That way we get even more Christmas music.
Yes.
Business plans, they abound.
Yes. Well, before we wrap things up, what's the best way for people to keep up with you guys?
Well, Instagram, there are two threads. You can go to the Liverbirds Band on Instagram, or the U.S. side of it, the other Fab Four, but posting is simultaneously. We're doing that with Steve Wiggins, who takes care of that on the other side of the pond. But yeah, I mean, you can direct message us at the other Fab Four. And yeah, if you have any questions about the Liver Birds or Christmas music or anything like that, Dawn and I would love to connect with you.
Great. I'll put links to those Instagrams down in the show notes for this too. Thank you both so much. This has been so much fun.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. I've enjoyed talking with you. It's fun to talk with you after listening to some of your podcasts and being like, oh, you're such a personable, friendly, kind person. So
oh, I love you. You're so sweet. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much. And it's always such a pleasure to talk to the creators behind some of the Christmas music that we love.
Well, thank you, Ken, and Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Merry Christmas to you, and Merry Christmas to you, Dawn. Thank you.
Merry Christmas.
And thank you so much for listening, helping us share some Christmas spirit, and for continuing to support the Sounds of Christmas station and podcast. I already told you how to listen to the station, and you're listening to the podcast now, so my work here is just about done. All of our episodes are available on the Sounds of Christmas website. Just click the podcast tab. And we also have a Linktree page that lists most, if not all, of the sites that stream the Sounds of Christmas podcast. So you can click that, find your favorite, click on over, and then subscribe, and you'll never miss another episode. If you have comments or suggestions on this episode, previous episodes, or the Sounds of Christmas station, feel free to reach out to me on social media or through the website. And if you're listening to this episode on your phone, you can also click the Send Us a Text Message link and connect that way. Thanks again. And may you always believe in Santa Claus.